You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Karen Chatton from Gardnerville, Nevada. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 12th, episode 3750. Good morning, Horse World.
When your start time's on Saturday and your finish time's on Sunday, and it doesn't get much better than best conditioned, and completing the challenge is the challenge, you're an endurance rider.
Welcome back, Karen.
Good morning. Good to be back.
Good to be back. It sounds like you've got all three horses back home now. Is that right?
I have two horses back home.
Oh, wait a minute. I
switched.
Oh.
I got the little gray horse back and I missed him. And then I sent my youngster for just some riding training.
Got it. So for newbies, introduce your three different horses.
I have three horses. I have VG Ben Jovi, who was named after a rock star and he thinks he is one. And he's done a couple of years of endurance now. Actually, this is his third ride season, and he's doing really well. And then I have St. Croix, who's a little gray Arabian, who's only 14 hands, and I'm bringing him along. We call him Saint. And then I've got another VG Midnight Cowboy, which is the same breeding that Jovi has, and we call him Cowboy. He just turned six. And he's just also he's not as far along as Saint. Saint has already been able to go out on the trail and be ridden. Cowboy has been led and walked out on the trail and ridden in an arena. So he's a little bit further behind, but we're getting him brought along too. So hopefully by next season, I'll have more than one horse that'll be ready to start out doing some LDs or 50s.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
I know.
So for starting with all these, because even though Jovi's not young, Jovi was reasonably green when you got him.
Reasonably, uh-huh.
You know, he didn't have a lot of life experience yet.
No.
What has been the biggest surprise when it came to basically having to start afresh with these new horses between the three of them? What was the thing that you went, dang, didn't see that coming?
Because it had been like over 20 years since I had really started a horse. And you forget how much work it entails. You just forget. You just remember all the good times. And then, of course, like with Chief, I rode him for over 20 years. So I remember I had so many good years of riding him, but you forget all the work you put in, all the basics, all the little things you have to teach him. And so that's why it's taking me so long. Because once I got Jovi going, I've been taking him to endurance rides regularly and then also trying to fit in all the stuff involved with bringing along the other horses. Like now they can all be bathed and their feet handled and they can be tied and they do okay with collars on the high tie and just all those little bitty things that it takes to get a new horse going, because you never know what you're going to experience on an endurance ride.
Well, right. And for that matter, even if you do show hunters, if you do Western pleasure, when it comes to taking your horse out and doing things, you're going to clinics and you're going to competitions, you have very, very little control over the circumstances that you show up to. So it is smart to do as much work as you can where you can control multiple factors. I'm going to use the word desensitization because I hate to use it because it's overused, but take those small steps towards getting them used to things so that when you show up at the showgrounds and by golly, right next door to the horse trailer parking lot, they're doing construction and there's giant chunks of machinery that your horse doesn't lose his marbles because, well, you know, you took the time to get him used to the local tractors and tractor trailers and stuff like that. So regardless of your discipline, taking your green horse, whether it's a young green horse or a adult horse who just hasn't had a lot of life experience yet, it's really smart and it's going to make your life more pleasant and a lot safer to do all that stuff. For me, with James, who again, very limited life experience in big V-E-R-Y letters, just something as simple as getting fly spray on him. He would stand still for him if you walked him up and made him stand against a wall, because then he couldn't go anywhere. He'd stand there. It's like, you know, that's not ideal. We need to figure out the fly spray thing. What's the big surprise for me is I forgot how many times you have to repeat the skill and how frequently before it gets to the point, like, oh, it's fly spray. You know, if I don't put fly spray on him for 2.5 days, he forgot a little bit.
Exactly.
That just hits me in the head again and again and again, because like you, I had Nigel for 10 years and he wasn't exactly green when I got him. He was green from the point of view of he didn't know how to bend and go in the bit and things like that, but he knew all the basics. Mm-hmm. You know, he had gone through race training, so he had all those things. And that has chipped away a little bit at my ego.
Yes, there's a, you know, and then even just taking them for a walk through the neighborhood, I've learned that I need to do it on a windy day. Like, Karen wants to be inside when the weather's bad now. Well, no, you have to take the horses out and let them see the yard art that spins and the flags flap and the noise that things make. You know, so there's lots of little things, because, you know, when you're on an endurance ride, you cannot control the weather. And so
you can't control which dogs get loose. You can't control who's using the trail that shouldn't be there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or if there's a lot of the kids now have electric bikes and they don't know about approaching horses carefully, and they'll go zooming right by you. And if there's any wind or breeze at all between that and the horse's footsteps, you can't hear them coming.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
or even
true.
A regular bicycle.
That's true.
You know, when it's still and quiet, you can usually hear a little bit of the tires, but
their tires are rustling of some sort. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we've gone out of our way to try to expose the horses to all of those things. Like every morning for a couple months last summer, I'd feed the horses in the field and me and my husband would go ride our mountain bikes around them.
And oh, that's a good idea to do it that way. Put their feed buckets outside in the field. Yeah. I'm going to take it. Yeah.
So just all those little things. And so now they're all pretty good. They can have bicycles come up from behind them or towards them. I've even had Saint have an electric bike come up from behind him on the trail. And he just sort of turned around and moved over to let it go by. And no spook or nothing. But it always, because we put in all that time on those little bitty details that you have to think about, what can I encounter? And so the world has changed a lot from going back 20 or 30 years ago when I was first starting some of my first horses.
See, who'd have thought that
there
would be a day that we wish there were motorbikes again? At least the motorbike, you could hear it coming.
Yes. Well, or not so many side-by-sides, because they've kind of taken over.
Yeah. See, we don't have that as much here as you guys do out west.
Yeah. It can be an issue.
We have a lot of bicycles of every description here. Yeah.
Right. And just in general, the whole horse thing has quieted down. There's not as many people that own horses in my neighborhood. It used to be all horse. It's all horse properties. But now everybody
They have
side-by-side.
The horses have aged out.
They don't have a horse. So now we have to put out extra effort and try a little harder to get our new horses accustomed to dealing with everything. Because not only have things changed, but the people have changed. They're not as patient anymore. They're not as understanding. Like if you ask somebody to slow down or stop for a young horse, they'll shout at you, "You need to train your horse." Well, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, let me have some patience.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. I think so many people don't understand that just driving a car fast past the horse loses his marbles. That's not training the horse. That's actually untraining the horse.
I know. Exactly. Well, and I live down, there's a road just around the corner from me that goes to the local dump. So we will often have trucks or cars pulling trailers with metal trash cans and things that rattle and bang and clink passing my horses. So that's also something they need to get used to. And so I really appreciate when those people do slow down, but a lot of them aren't, they're not conscious of the fact that they're pulling a trailer and everything's bouncing and clunking and clinking, or maybe even dragging. So we just, you know, we go out and we purposely try to do as much as we can to get the horses so they are safe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's been an adventure. It has been an adventure. And speaking of adventures, as I say, every time I get to co-host with Karen, endurance riders have the best adventures. Tell us about your adventures when we need to catch up since last month.
Well, gosh, I've been riding. I've now got two horses to ride. So we've been doing that. I wanted to give a shout out to the Horse Radio Network team. We have Auditor's team of virtual Tevis riders who finished first in the team category on the virtual Tevis.
Woohoo! Ding, 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 ding.
I know everybody was getting on board with going out and getting their miles in because we
that's
were
right.
Really close for a while with Stacy Westfall's team, and they had a lot more riders. So good job, guys.
Yeah, we had a lot of really high mileage people, you being one of them. So that was exciting. And I joined the fun again this year just to motivate me. And I think I contributed just about an intro ride.
Good. Oh, you tried.
There's we tried. Year. We did our best, you know.
Right. Yep. And we also have a Horse Radio Network, That Girl team, that's currently in first place in the Green Bean division in AERC. So good job.
Wow. Great job, ladies.
Yes.
Good. Is that all ladies? That's great.
I think we have a guy or two in there, don't we? I think we do.
Well, great job, ladies and gents.
That's right. We don't want to miss anybody. Everybody. Good job.
Everybody.
Great. The other exciting thing that happened on July 12th was the 69th running of the Tevis Cup 100-mile ride. It starts at Roby Park above Lake Tahoe, Nevada at 5:15. This year, 105 riders and horses lined up to make that start, and they had 24 hours to cross the finish line in Auburn, California.
Phew. Yes. So do they cap the number of riders? Do you know?
They do, but they're not getting anywhere near the number of entries they used to get. It used to be capped. So entries, 105 entries is way down over historical times.
Yeah. I think that the cost of travel has really deterred a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. That too. I'm sure it's a combination of, you know, just a lot of things. We don't have as many rides in the West region. And I think that also kind of limits the number of people that can get really prepared and conditioned. And
it would be hard to condition for the Tevis Cup in Florida. You know, it didn't matter how many rides you did. You need to, with that kind of terrain, you need to condition on that terrain. You know,
that's true. You know, although Heather and Jeremy Reynolds came in first and second, and they live in Florida part of the year.
I think that's key.
Part of the year is the key. And so let's give them a shout out. They finished they gave Heather the win, even though Heather and Jeremy crossed the finish line holding hands in a ride time of 15 hours and 45 minutes, nearly 2 hours ahead of the next competitor. The winner of the Hagen Cup was John Perry riding a Real Diva. Oh, and Supersonic Zell was ridden by Heather on and received first place. John Perry finished in 17 hours and 54 minutes.
Wow. That's just bonkers. So trail-wise and weather-wise, was it a... It didn't seem to have a serious weather problem this time around.
You know, it was...
It was hot, but...
Tempest is always hot, so you kind of expect that. The completion rate was a little lower this year. Could be any number of factors. You know, the one cool thing, I know we like to promote all the breeds in the endurance, but for the most part, Arabians really excel at the sport of endurance. 43 of the 105 entries finished. The finish rate is normally like 40 to 50%. And out of those, 35 of the finishers were Arabians and 4 were part Arabians.
So I might differentiate here for someone who might not be familiar with the granular level at which endurance, technically endurance racing, happens. And I don't think I was really cognizant of it till I dived a little deeper before I started to try and compete. People might think that Arabians excel because Arabians can go fast and they're a very durable breed by name. They're bred for that, to be durable. But during an endurance race, periodically every X miles, 15 miles, 20 miles during a race, either a 50 or 100 or whatever distance the race is, every X number of miles, the horse has to come in for a vet check, and the horse has to take a little break, and his pulse has to come down to a certain level, which indicates he's no longer stressed, within a certain period of time. So it's all about how quick their body can recover. Mm-hmm. And a certain amount of that is genetic. Some horses just have an incredible ability to do that. And some horses have a good ability to do that that can become incredible through the skills of the person doing the conditioning and then the riding during the race. And that's a big reason that these Arabians and part Arabians excel, is that genetic recovery rate is still there and it's still bred for versus other breeds. It's just not valued, so they don't continue to breed for that kind of thing. So that tiny detail was lost on me for a long time. It's the recovery. It's not their ability to go 100 miles. It's their ability to go for 100 miles and stop for 15 minutes and be very comfortable and recovered. Mm-hmm. And ready to go again. That's just incredible to me that they can do that.
Yes, it's a lot of it is management as well.
Well, yes, exactly. That's the skill of the rider and their team to take that horse who's been well conditioned and you get to the vet checks and to give that horse his optimal opportunity to recondition. It's crazy. You read in the blog posts and the discussion forums about, oh, well, my horse recovers X percent faster if I do wash his face or I don't wash his face. The granular detail is amazing.
You know, some years, like we've had the Mustangs do really well. And this year, I don't think they did that well.
I think, what was there, two or three this year? Or were there more than that?
There was more than that.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, I can kind of figure out the stats maybe later, but yeah, it's very interesting. It goes in cycles, I think, and you know, until you really analyze the data over a period of years, you really don't know. I know overall, I think a horse with a really good body score, regardless of their breed, is going to be more likely to finish.
Ooh, so, tell me what is a really good body score? Define.
Probably a five and a half I know Bo always went into Tuvis with probably a 5.5 or a 6. And the vets would joke, well, when he gets to Auburn, he'll be at a 5. But you don't really want to start a ride under a 5 body score, especially 100.
Interesting. See, I would not. I would. That's so counterintuitive to me. Interesting. Because they said that because they're going for such a long time, they need to use those reserves.
That's right.
Huh. Huh. Light bulb moment.
You know, and there's always anomalies. There's always a horse that, you know, that's outside of that range and does really well. But in general, they have done research in the past on Tuvis, and you were definitely at a higher percentage chance to finish if you had a body score within that certain range.
Interesting. Huh. How about that?
Yeah. Something else we've learned over all these years of the sport is to take, you know, better care of our horses just in general with our feed and how we condition them and train them and giving them rest in between competitions and understanding what stresses them out, like long trailer rides and making sure they get plenty of rest. There's just a lot of stuff, you know, that makes the sport, especially a ride like Tuvis, very strategic.
Well, guess what? The Arabian Horse Association is a proud sponsor of the Endurance Rider Podcast. Woohoo! The Arabian horse was born in the desert, built for endurance, and proven on the trail. Each year, we celebrate this legacy at Distance Nationals, where riders of all levels come together for an unforgettable competition. This year, we're heading to Old Salem Ride Site in New Centerville, Idaho. Wow! Join us for national championship rides and open rides, all showcasing the heart and stamina of the Arabian horse. If you're ready to ride, learn more at arabianhorses.org.
And our first guest this morning is Rachel Gobble. She joined us last month while she was in Auburn getting ready for the Tuvis Cup. And as it turned out, she went on to have a successful completion in 34th place with the 21 hour and 29 minute ride time on her horse Petrova ARA. So congratulations, Rachel. And we're looking forward to hearing all about it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. So walk us through your overall experience with the Tuvis Cup on July 12th. How did it feel to navigate through all those rugged Sierra Nevada mountains for 100 miles?
Oh, wow. Well, it's kind of hard to sum up quite such a journey in a brief sentence, but I would say the trail is really like unrelenting and really unforgiving with all the rock and the continuous ascending and descending. And I found the beginning really quite aggressive with so many horses and everyone jostling for a good position. And I mean, once we got out of the hold, we were flying along at 10 miles an hour, which I thought was way too fast for the start of a 100-mile ride. But I mean, there's so many horses there, you couldn't have slowed down if you wanted to because you would have been trampled. So I mean, it was really quite an experience. I found it a little bit stressful at the start, but I was really glad that my horse stayed calm because usually she's quite uptight at the start of rides. But for some miraculous reason, when we were holding in pen 2 and waiting to go on the road, she just stood there totally quiet. I was like not even sure what horse I had that morning, but I was really grateful that she was so calm. And finally, things kind of started to spread out and people found their own pockets as we climbed up the Olympic Valley there. And then it got a little bit more controlled, I would say. But yeah, the start was crazy. Like I would never have gone that fast through terrain like that previously. But I came into Robinson Flat like 10 minutes to 11, which I know 11 o'clock was the suggested cutoff time. So in retrospect, I couldn't have really gone any slower. So that to me just blows me away how quick you actually have to go when you can, even in really rocky conditions. So yeah, it was incredible.
So what were the toughest physical and mental challenges for you during the ride?
Well, I had a bit of when I was driving down to the Tuvis Cup, I'd actually gotten sick with bronchitis, So I was on antibiotics the whole time. And even though in the morning when I started out, I was feeling pretty good, it did add an extra layer of challenge for me to not be feeling well and to have kind of a persistent cough. Like at that point, I'd already been coughing for 10 days. And in the first half, I was actually feeling pretty good. And I did the downhills of the canyons on foot. And it was actually pretty funny. At one point, I was going downhill on foot, you know, kind of a slow jog. And I felt so great. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go all the way up Devil's Thumb on foot and save my horse. Well, I made it to the first switchback and aggravated my lungs. And I was like, nope, not happening. So I had to get back on, and poor Petrova, she had to just carry me up the whole way while I coughed. But, and then by the end of the day, I had totally lost my voice, and I was just feeling, I think everyone's tired at that point, but I was starting to feel like I'd really just had enough of this day already, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I felt that was the biggest challenge. But otherwise, there was so much excitement and the views were so beautiful. And I had such an awesome crew that was so supportive that, like, I never really had a low. Like, the lowest point probably just would have been in the evening when I'm getting really fatigued and my horse is fatigued. And, you know, it's taken a long time to finish off the last 20 miles. But even so, I would say that the terrain after leaving Forest Hill was probably some of my favorite miles, especially along the river. You know, you look to your left and the cliff drops off and you can see the river lit up by the moonlight and hear it rushing below. And it was just absolutely like ethereal. Like, it was so beautiful and definitely my favorite section of trail. So yeah. And we did Cougar Rock. That was really good. I didn't have any trouble with her with that. I was fortunate that another horse had just gone up in front. So Petrova clearly thought that was the way to go, and she can get a little impatient. So it was kind of funny to me, while I waited for my turn to go up, she stood there pawing as if to say, let me at her. And I let her go, and then she just flew up it. So that was a non-issue, and it was over really fast. So yeah, it was all really cool. So
did you have any other unexpected obstacles, like on the trail or with equipment?
Yeah, actually I did. Now that you mention it, I, in the first, coming into Robinson, my saddle was slipping over Petrova's neck. I had to get off twice and fix it, which I've never had happen before. I've never gone down descents that steep. And I mean, they weren't even anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and even walking, like, my saddle just was slipping. And I think part of the problem was, is I'd gotten it for her when she was a new horse. So, you know, she's lost quite a bit of weight from being a pasture pup to, you know, Teva's shape. So I think it might be a bit wide for her now, but I texted my crew kind of a panic message. I was like, need crouper. And Brian went and talked to Kathy Perry, and she managed to borrow a crouper from somebody. I still don't know whose crouper I used that day, but I'm really grateful because it saved my saddle from falling off for the rest of the ride. So that worked out really well.
What did you think about all the volunteers and support you had along the way?
Oh, the volunteers were amazing. I was always so grateful to them. They were so incredibly helpful, and they always seemed to go the extra mile to see whatever they could do for you. It was really great and really uplifting too. Like, I've done two 75s I've done totally by myself as the only entry, and with no other riders and stuff. When you're riding all day, it can get kind of, you know, kind of humdrum. And then when you come in and there's volunteers and people to help you that are really optimistic, it can really brighten your spirits, so to speak, and make it feel a lot better. So, but I mean, obviously there's lots of riders on the Tevis Trail too. So with all the commotion and excitement and all the support, it, like I said, you never really felt like you had a low because there's just so much going on and so much energy. It was really cool. So.
Well, looking back, what was the most rewarding part of completing the Tevis, and how did the challenges of the ride and the travel shape your perspective on endurance riding?
Probably one of the most personally rewarding parts, apart from just completing it, was my grandparents drove down Friday before the start and surprised me with coming in person. They had said they weren't going to be able to make it down from Canada to California, but they drove it in 2 days and surprised me when I was loading loading up Friday morning to go to Truckee. And so to have my grandparents there at the finish line when my grandpa had done it a few times before and it always inspired me to go was just made it extra rewarding. And so to me, that was the icing on the cake, was to have my grandma and grandpa there to watch me go around the stadium. And in terms of travel coming down, I mean, like it being a bit of a long haul is a bit of a challenge, and just taking the time away from work and life responsibilities. But we seem to just kind of have extra challenges each day. There always seems to be something unexpected that comes up. Like I think I'd mentioned before, I had some trouble with the bearings on my trailer, and we had to get a mechanic on a Sunday in Nevada. And so I feel like when people, I've seen on Facebook, people ask like, oh, how much should I budget to go down to Tevis? And I kind of want to tell everyone, like, make sure you budget like probably an extra $1,000 for unforeseen circumstances. Like, hopefully you don't need it, but it just seems like when you're traveling that far and you're away from home and familiar environment, there's just going to be things that you never thought would happen that come up. So it's good to have a little bit of emergency budget there.
Or do you think you're going to do it again? Or did you get it out of your system?
Oh, no, I was already planning, like, as I was still writing strategies for next year to do better. I was like, oh, I should have done this and I could have done that. And next year I'm going to do this. And yeah, no, I'm really excited to come back again and try and place a little bit better, because I mean, at that point, like even an hour of time, and I know where I lost my time in various places, like even an hour of time could have made me place a lot better than I did. And obviously I was just in it to finish the first time, having never experienced the trail. But now that I've been through it, I'm like, oh, you know, I could have saved 10 minutes there and I could have saved 5 minutes there. And it really does add up. Like everyone talks about how you have to really like be conscientious of your time. And I really understand that now, having been through it. So no, I'm super excited to come back and try it again.
Good, 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 good. Well, congratulations again. And we're so excited for you. And hopefully you get to make it back next year.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Kristen from the Distance Depot. And today we're going to be talking about her beautiful custom designed biathane tack. Welcome, Kristen.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, how long have you been making this tack?
Oh boy, just probably a little over 20 years. Yeah. So it has evolved into so many products and so many options that it can be a little overwhelming.
I know, so many. How much has the range of colors grown in that time?
Oh my gosh. It has grown just, it's unbelievable how many colors. I'm pretty sure we have, I'm guessing that we have probably one of the biggest selections of biathane and Southwestern designs that we sew onto this biathane tack. And I'm pretty sure most of your listeners already know what biathane is, but in case there's someone out there that doesn't know what it is, it's a poly-coated urethane material. And on the inside of the material is a very strong nylon, similar to like your nylon halter. So it's very strong, as strong, if not maybe a little stronger than leather. It will break if there's, you know, if it comes down to when 1,000 pounds starts to pull on it, it will break at a hole or something like that. So that's sometimes a worry for folks, but it will break. Generally, it doesn't. Like I say, it's good and strong, super easy to clean. You can throw it in a bucket of soapy water and rinse it off, rub it with your hands, use a cloth, whatever, hang it up. And it looks like new, stays looking like new for years. We use stainless steel or solid brass hardware. So you can have your choice there. We have probably 31 matte finished beta biathane colors. And we use the beta biathane typically as the underlay color or the main color of your tack. And then you can choose, we have so many designs. We have 17 Southwestern designs. We have 21 of the shiny biathane colors. We have reflect colors and camo designs. So I think we're almost up to 90 different colors choices. So the color options are pretty much endless. It is all custom. So we do offer some color snippets or samples. So you can email us with your mailing address and request some color samples. We do have a color chart and sizing guidelines on the website. But honestly, taking a picture of these colors is so difficult to have them show up properly. It's best if you're unsure of the colors to ask for some samples. That way you can see them in person and know for sure which colors you're getting. So there's that. We have tons of grip colors for the reins because, of course, we make bridles, halter bridles, breast collars, reins of all different types, split reins and grippy reins, yacht reins. We have tons of products on the website. And then the accessories. There's just too many to name, but some of the accessories include stirrup cages, stirrup leathers, running martingales, and so on. So there's quite a bit. We do tell people, if you're unsure because it's overwhelming, just give us a call and we're always happy to help walk you through the selections and differences in the styles of bridles, and because it's a lot. There's just a ton of tack on there. So always best to, if you have any questions at all, just call one of our customer service people and they're happy to walk you through all of the options.
How would they get in touch with you via your phone or your website?
Yeah, our phone number is toll free 866-863-2349, or they can visit us at www.thedistancedepot.com.
Hey, quick question. This is an important one. You're making custom tack. Comes in yes. standardized sizing, for example, mm-hmm. horse size. Absolutely. Customized colors. You can also get mm-hmm. customized sizing by taking measurements.
Yes.
Typical turnaround from order to delivery is?
We have probably the fastest turnaround in the industry. Our typical time frame is the same day you make it to 3 business days later. It's out the door and on its way to you.
Thanks, Kristen. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Our next guests this morning are Miranda Bibb and Jenny Dart, who are co-ride managers of the Big South Fork Ride, which is held in the beautiful Big South Fork National River and Recreation Area, which straddles the Tennessee-Kentucky border in the Southeast region. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi there.
Hi. Okay, let's start with Miranda. Give us a little information on the ride. Like, what are the dates and when is it coming up for 2025? And tell us about the distances involved.
Okay, so the ride is always the weekend after Labor Day. So this year that falls on September 5th and 6th. We will be providing intro distances both days. Generally, we offer 2 different distances for that. And we will have traditional 25-30 LDs along with 50 and 55 endurance distances. And this year, we are hosting the 100-mile distance. We rotate every other year with Nancy Slice, who runs the Iron Mountain Ride.
Hey, Jenny, tell us about what your base camp is like.
Well, we are adjacent to the Bandy Creek campground, but we are past it. We have two open fields off a road. And so it's a primitive camping. We've got some porta potties that, with the campground being half a mile away at the most, that we have shower facilities there if people need them. We've got horse water in camp. Of course, the veterinary area is right there. It's very centrally located, and the camp area is nice and quiet. It's easy to get to. And it's just a great atmosphere because it's really close. Everything is real contained together. The parking situation, the camping situation, it's all right there. And so it makes a great ride camp, we think.
And it's in Tennessee?
Yes, it is in Tennessee. And we are technically outside of Oneida, Tennessee. We are right on the Eastern time zone. So literally when riders are out on trail, your phone bounces back and forth between Central and Eastern time zone. But we run the ride camp in the Eastern time zone since that's where we are physically located.
Hey, Miranda, I see you guys are sanctioned with more than one organization. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, sure. So this year we have sanctioned with CIRA, which is our Southeast Endurance Regional group. And we also sanctioned with CEDRA, which is the Southeast Endurance Distance Rider Association. We had looked into sanctioning with another local group, and we will look into that again for next year. But that offers just an additional factor for some of the riders that are a part of these organizations for year-end awards and points and things. So that's what we do, of course, as well as with AERC.
Okay. And do you still do a ride and tie there?
We do. So we are... Ride and Tie kind of runs concurrently with us, and they also offer equathon distances. And that's a lot of fun to see the ride and tires on the trail. And we have friends that kind of double dip. They'll ride one day for endurance and they'll ride the next day, either a ride and tie or an equathon.
Great. Okay. Which one of you feels the most comfortable talking about the trails?
Probably Jenny. She's lived here longer. I'll pass you over.
Okay.
Oh, wow. We have, well, since we both live here now and we're quite partial to the trails, I guess since it's technically on the Cumberland Plateau, so really a lot of our trails are more, they're really more mountainous in terms of just what you're going to see, the difficulty. We have an excellent park service that we work with that maintains all these trails. There are several hundred miles of hiking and equestrian trails in the area, and they do an excellent job of keeping them maintained. And within the last 3-4 years, they've done a ton of work of revamping some of the difficult areas that have been washed out by, you know, winter rains that we get in great amounts. So they have been revamping a lot of the more popular trails. And so several of the ones that we have been riding lately, we've just laughed that they have been like bridle path trails because they've improved them so much. And it's been a lot of fun to see what they've done. It rolls through the forest area mostly, so we have a lot of rolling trail, hilly, and then we've got a lot of elevation change too, but there's a ton of places that riders can really move out on, and then we have a lot of technical trail. It's some of the features of the area. It's sandstone, and we have rock houses as you climb up or climb down from a ridgeline down to the creek areas. We have a lot of natural water on trail with a lot of creek crossings. And then, of course, we have a lot of strategic points where we add water with areas where we can access it. And it, what's that? Oh, yes. We have a great trail master that designs our trails for us and has for the last, well, she's done it for a number of years on and off, but now we've pulled her in permanently, and she does a fabulous job of designing the trails and getting them marked well. We've just had lots of really good feedback about that, and so that's been exciting. I don't know. I'm trying to think. Oh, new this year is that we've got a ham radio operator group that is coming in, and they're going to be at checkpoints throughout the ride at through the distances, and it'll provide us real-time knowledge of where all the riders are at certain checkpoints. And so we've been wanting to add this in. We've seen it at a few other rides in the Southeast and really like it as a rider. And for our ride, with some of the loops being fairly distant, we are excited that we can add this in as a safety feature as well.
Hey, Miranda, one more question for you guys. How many years has this ride gone on, and how long have you two?
So this is our this is our second full year managing this ride. It has run now for 32 years. And we were working in the background with Eric Reuter, who managed this ride for 20 years. We spent the last couple of years before we took over kind of managing in the background and taking on some responsibilities before he turned it over to us officially last year.
Good. That's great. Thanks for doing that, you guys. I know it's a lot of work being ride managers.
Yeah, it is. We do love it, though. It's part of the reason that I moved up this way as an endurance rider coming from Louisiana. We have very limited options for training and riding. So we made the decision to come this way. And Jenny was already here. So it just naturally fell that we offered with Eric to help him. And now we manage.
So. Great. Well, do you guys have a website we can share?
We actually do on Facebook, Big South Fork Endurance and Ride and Tie. It's visible, so anybody can find it. And of course, we do have it linked over at AERC on the calendar.
Okay. Well, great. We wish you great success with your ride this year. And thank you for joining us and telling us all about it.
50-pound feed bags, bulky supplement tubs, gallon fly spray refills, no problem. At Chewy, every order over $49 ships free, so you can stock up on all of your horse's favorites without heavy lifting. Order online or on the app and let Chewy deliver everything that your horse needs fast and free right to your barn, so you can spend more time with your horse and on your horse. Start shopping now at chewy.com/equine. And Karen, where can we find out more about upcoming rides and all the lowdown from the American Endurance Ride Conference?
Go to AERC.org and look up the online ride calendar for rides in your area. Another exciting thing coming up is the 2025 FEI World Endurance Championship for Young Riders and Juniors. It is scheduled to take place in Buftia, Romania on September 20th, 25. And this is a really big deal for all of our young riders and juniors that worked really hard all year to compete and qualify and then be selected. So we also want to mention that the Distance Depot did all of their tack.
Yay!
That's exciting. So we wish them all good luck, safe travels, and hope you guys all have a really great ride.
And that about wraps it up for today. Karen will be back again next month on the second Tuesday, where we will talk about all things endurance. And then Glenn and Jamie will be back again tomorrow with more fun and hijinks. See you next month, Karen.
See you next month. Everybody be safe and wear your helmets out there.